Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Got Mike Stulley here. He's the development manager at Cox Automotive. Thanks so much, Mike, for taking the time, mate. Looking forward to the chat.
Yep, not a problem. Really looking forward to this.
Good man. Yeah. Before we get started, obviously, I think it's probably worth giving a bit of context on sort of your background and sort of what you're up to at the moment, if that's all right.
Yep, sure. At the moment, we are starting to go through a big rollout of a project that we've been working on for the past year and a half. It's mainly an Azure deployment. So we're going through that process of rolling it out to all of our sites, which is really exciting. And seeing them using it is kind of a real buzz when you see them kind of really using the systems and kind of the fruitfulness of your work. So that's great to see. I've come from a humble background of being a developer in a language hardly known called Progress. It's a 4GL-driven language. And I've grown from being the developer to leading a team and then where I am now, which is development manager. So I look after 10 or 11 people who work for me. We're operating in an agile manner and we got squads. So we're kind of little groups of us are interacting with the other members of the teams that we work with. So the BAs, the product owners, and the PMs who are the scrum masters. And we're on that agile journey and have been doing for the last 2 years, and it's really seen fruit. So that's a bit of background of where I'm from. Cox Automotive itself, we've been in business for quite a long time now. We're actually an American-owned company, but they give us a lot of autonomy in what we do here in the UK. Our vision is to see the automotive buying of and selling of vehicles totally different. So we're not just looking at just the auctions, which people would normally think of when they kind of think of the automotive business, what we do in the auctions. But we see it as more than that. It's about the whole journey through the vehicle life cycle. So transporting, refurb, the buying, the selling, the routing down to the showrooms, everything that is a vehicle, that's our business, and that's what we aim to please the customers and the vendors and do the best for them in all cases.
Interesting. Is it? It seems like there's clearly been some monumental shifts, I would imagine, in that space with the impact that technology's had. People with skill sets such as yourself, I would imagine, it's almost had a complete facelift at this point.
Absolutely. So it's been a very old style industry in the past. So people turning up to an auctions and kind of seeing physically the cars. It's one of those things that when you are purchasing such a high value item, whether that be a purchaser who's buying multiple cars or even just a single car, you're not just paying £5 out of a shop and walking out of something for something that you might see online. You know, the average cost can be between about £500, and we sold Bentleys and things like that for kind of £50,000-£60,000.
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of thing that you go, oh, just press buy now and hope for the best and see what happens. So there's often a lot of resistance in going, we need to become an IT-driven industry. But in saying that, the move towards IT is now at such a phenomenal rate that people want to see stuff available for sale now. And they want to get in early when they see that opportunity for purchasing a vehicle, which is at the top of the range, their top spec, whatever they want. They want to buy it now. They don't want to wait for it to go around an auction and potentially be outbid. So the market's shifted somewhat to a more of a buy it now model, but at the same time, the auction's still it takes its place for those other cars that people want to get the highest, what we call a cap value, which is basically an industry standard value of how we price cars. And that's what the vendors are after, is obviously the most money for their cars. And sometimes auctions the best way of doing that rather than a kind of buy it now value. What's changed in IT is the way that we, you know, portray those vehicles. It's no longer about just going, oh, look, it's some words which says it's a Ford Focus. People want to see the images. They want to be able to zoom in on the images. They want to see the car driving past. They want to hear the noise. So we've made leaps and bounds in terms of technology and what we can give. So, for example, we do a 360 image, which allows people to zoom in and zoom out of the car so that they can see for themselves any issues of the car or what kind of nick it is in, or the paint color, or any kind of little chips that have been identified on in inspection so that they can actually see the physical size of them. And that's just something that wasn't happening 5 years ago. It was literally you turn up and you can see it. Now, it's all about how IT can benefit the vendors and the buyers so that they can actually see the vehicle, so that they can feel what the vehicle looks like and almost touch it, really. And it just offers a better experience for all parties.
Amazing. Yeah, I think so. It's been one of those industries. It's interesting. I've had a couple of people on the show this week, that have been in sort of similar fields where, you know, technology really has in recent years completely transformed the industry. And I think the one consistency is that kind of transparency aspect that's really driven, you know, the market for the better, quite frankly. From your perspective, when you kind of got involved in the business, was there like an expectation and then a reality of the kind of work that you thought you were to inevitably what you ended up working on?
I think there was. When I first joined the business, it was all very much a, we sell cars, our business is selling cars. And it's like, so what part is IT playing in this industry? And it was like, hopefully as little as possible, because that's not where the value is added. That has substantially shifted now, in that everybody sees it as the digital channel is the driver for the industry. That wouldn't have even been said 5 years ago. So to see that shift in what we are being asked to do is quite ginormous. But there's also expectations on what we can deliver as well. Vendors and buyers are both wanting more detail, more real-time feeds, information on the kind of pulse of their finger, so that they can react to the market as well as everybody else who's in it. So they are wanting more information quicker. So it used to be that we used to do the standard FTP out the files, get that file out sometime in the night time we'll do. Whereas what people are wanting now is, well, as soon as you sell that vehicle, can you notify me? As soon as I bought a vehicle, could you notify me? Can you tell me about bidding increments? How much has this vehicle got up to when it's been sold? I want to be able to place a proxy bid so I can bid on it in advance. It's all about the now. I think 5 years ago, it was all about the, well, as long as we can sell a car, IT helps. Now IT is really a central focus of what we do. And without IT in the mix, there is just so many things that vendors and buyers and the business itself loses out on, because we are the forefront of what people see. We are the shop window now of Cox Automotive.
Yeah, it has been a fascinating journey. And I know before the recording that obviously you mentioned that you've been through a bit of an agile transformation. Was that kind of necessary because of the way that things have moved? What was the sort of process for, first of all, I suppose, determining that this was something that you were going to go down, and then actually then committing to the process and how that's impacted things, hopefully for the better?
Absolutely. So we started very much in the standard industry pattern, which was waterfall, which was you get a massive big spec and then you're given a timeline to deliver it and you deliver it. And then somebody goes either, oh, that was great, that was just what I wanted, or alternatively, I didn't expect quite that, it's not quite what I wanted, followed by another round of a big spec coming out and then starting again. We've moved to an agile pattern for two reasons, really. One, we find it beneficial for ourselves that we can actually deliver things faster. We get more feedback. The feedback loop is incredibly quick by having your product owner on board and being able to give them a demonstration at the end of a sprint. Secondly, it's far better for reacting to what the market wants as well. We're no longer confined to just going, well, hang on a moment, we've got to finish this other project, which has been 6 months down the pipeline. And if you want it done, we'll need to come over, we'll need to spec it out with you before we can sign it off, and then we'll all sign it off. It's not like that anymore. People are wanting stuff now. Mm. And by using an agile methodology, in essence, we can react quicker to them. We can prioritize dependent on business needs against monetary value. Obviously, is a key thing for any business, is that something needs to have a monetary value. And if somebody comes up with a requirement that obviously has a bigger monetary value than the one that you're currently working on, well, you should probably drop it and work for the stuff that's going to bring in the money. So there's a business benefit to that, and there is a customer benefit in that we are able to kind of turn around things quicker, that we can deliver out to the customer and react better if they want changes. Moving towards agile has enabled that. However, it's not the end goal, because although we can deliver quicker without a kind of CI/CD model of DevOps, we can't necessarily get out as quicker out of the door as we'd like to. So that's really the next step along the route, is to go down a CI/CD model, end up with more automation testing in what we're doing so that we can deliver stuff quicker to the end customer as well as to the business.
Have you like been running it in, I mean, I suppose this goes without saying, but running it kind of internally as well, not just on like, you know, a consultative basis working with clients, but have you also like done it internally on perhaps non like software relevant I suppose pain points and such that you're trying to solve using agile?
So this is probably a question which we should drop. So the answer is just no.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those. Agile's a funny one. I think it can be applied to different businesses. We use Scrum within NIT, and it works well for us in terms of the business gets a feedback loop. Now, I think it is definitely applicable to some areas of business. The only other day I saw a recruitment agency using Agile to actually get a quicker turnaround and get a kind of Kanban methodology of what do we need to do today? What's our sprint goals? What are we hoping to achieve out of this? And actually having a retrospective to look back about how they could improve. I do think it can be used. I think it's picking the right elements for the right things. Not everything works for everybody. And we'd be foolish to say, do you know what? Google are using this method of Agile. Everybody should therefore use this method of Agile because that's obviously the one that is most successful. Agile doesn't really predetermine a course of how you go down that route. The idea of Agile is iterative development. You get the feedback loop working quicker and bringing people and getting the teamwork element working. I think it's about how you implemented it in different parts of the business. It can be used, but you've got to pick what's right for you.
Yeah. And how do you think the best way to, I suppose, approach the decision-making process on that is? Or is it literally, do you think it's just common sense?
That's an interesting question. I think when we started off, we took Agile internally, and you'll find a lot of IT firms do this initially, because sometimes it's quite hard to get the business buy into it, because you suddenly go, well, instead of working 7.5 hours a day, what we're actually going to do is work 5 hours a day. And they go, what? You're only working 5 hours a day? And it's like, yes, the rest of the time we're going to spend with you in getting the design, the look and the feel right. We're going to refine those items, make sure they're working, and we're going to demo it to you every 2 weeks, to which the initial feedback is, but I don't have time to get involved in that every 2 weeks. I'm too busy. And it automatically gets you into this spin of, so how the heck do we do it? Because if we can't get the business to buy in and the culture to buy in, then how are we going to make Agile work? I think you can make Agile work without the business buying, but it is a lot harder. We're very lucky in that we've got a director and CIO who are very pro-Agile and very pro-DevOps. And it really helps pushing it on with the business, because it's not just the kind of IT department selling Agile and how good it is. Mm. What it is the business being sold from the group, how good developing in Agile is, and showing the benefits. And I think as soon as the business go, oh, I can see what you mean now, because you're showing me what I wanted to see on a project that you delivered 6 months ago, but I'm seeing it after 3 weeks, the rough look and feel, and I can comment upon that and go, yep, thumbs up, that's going well. Or actually, hang on a moment, we need to stop and think about what we're doing. And there's nothing wrong with stopping halfway through something, because what it means is that instead of delivering a 6 month project and then going, ah, maybe we shouldn't have done that, actually you're just stopping after 2 or 3 weeks. And so the loop back to the business has increased, and actually the loss of time and capacity that the IT team has had is massively reduced. You've now, in essence, saved 5 months if you stop a project going ahead after 2 or 3 weeks. You save 5 months of work, which can be better spent benefiting the business and benefiting the customers in other ways. So it can be driven internally. It's easier if the business have bought into it. But I think as soon as people see that loop, and as soon as people see the response, then actually it's easier to get business buy-in to get a product owner, because they suddenly see that the benefit to them is actually more than the amount of effort that they have to put in to be that product owner and be involved.
Yeah, it's certainly a topic that gets pulses raising, because I think, like you say, I think it's part of one of those things like a GDPR or something, right, that comes in and people really start monetizing off it, right, and selling it as like, this is for everyone. And I think that's where the kind of the waters get muddied a little bit with it, that it still has, you have to have a purpose that makes sense to work in this way.
And I don't think it is for everyone. So a classic thing that I go down of is the DevOps process. And you kind of go, can we make this solution into a DevOps process? And if it's a legacy system, I'm not sure that the right answer is yes.
Mm.
Because the amount of time and effort it will take you to get that legacy system into something that you can continuously deploy, that you can have automation test on, that the changes are all, in essence, microservices. By the time you've done all that, actually, your product's retired. And you've just wasted 6 months, a year, whatever that length of time is, getting it into a state where actually you don't need to do that. I think you genuinely have to look at the size of the project the scope of change that it's going to involve, the impact of other systems, the cost to the business and the cost of loss of productivity and engagement in other projects if you're going to implement DevOps in everything. Mm. However, having said that, for new projects that you're designing from the bottom up and any greenfield deployments, I'd almost go, why wouldn't you use DevOps? Because there are obvious benefits in terms of scalability. If you're using AWS or Azure or any cloud service, there's benefits in the quicker turnaround time. There's benefits in the fact that once you deploy your product, it's automatically tested, not only after it's deployed, but it can be tested prior to it being deployed, and ensuring builds work. There are so many benefits that, okay, you have the short term, yes, it's going to take longer, but the benefits so outweigh the investment in time that it's a bit of a no-brainer.
I think it's just a good point to finish on, is talking about the agile stuff, and I think that's quite conclusive and you've answered it quite effectively. So I think we'll leave it there for now, mate, if that's all right.
That's grand.
Enjoyed it, Mike. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Hey, no problems, Andy. Thanks very much for your time as well.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time. Thank you.